Hi.
It's good to see you guys. I'm going to start by playing a song. This particular song is called I Surrender. So.
Here I am, down on my knees again, surrendering all, surrendering all. And find me here, Lord, as you draw me near, I'm desperate for you. Desperate for you, I surrender.
That was a good teaching. All right, so we are here for the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. We're on page 87, somewhere. I have no idea where. It looks like probably I was teaching in my bedroom last week and didn't have a pen, and so I didn't mark it when I was done, and I forgot to go back and mark it. So I'm just going to start here. Yeah, I probably did this last week, but I'll just start here. Yeah, I think we were at the bottom page, but we'll go back a little bit. So I'm going to start with the first devotee question on page 87. I cannot say it is all clear to me. Is the world that is seen, felt, and sensed by us in so many ways something like a dream, an illusion? Ramana Maharshi. There is no alternative for you but to accept the world as unreal. If you are seeking the truth and the truth alone. And we did cover this last week, but I'm very happy to look at it again. I think I remember mentioning last week that when I was in, when I was a scribe writing NTI Matthew, one of the things that came through me then, and again, that was the beginning of NTI, one of the things that came through me then was that you have to accept that the world is not real. If you're not willing to do that, you won't awaken. There's several reasons for that. You know, if we start with just basic forgiveness, basic letting go of thoughts and, you know, especially grievances, that's where many of us started with A Course in Miracles. There are a lot of things that people do to you in this world that if you don't accept that the world is not real, there's just no reason to forgive it. You know, I mean, if the world's real, what they did was not fair. And, you know, and you have every single solitary reason to cling to your grievance. I practiced forgiveness to the best of my ability up until I got to NTI Ephesians. And when I wrote NTI Ephesians, that's when I really got it that the world was not real. That's when I really got it at something deeper than an intellectual level, that the world is a projection of our thoughts. And that's when I got it, that if I, for example, continue to hold a grievance against someone, even if they appear to deserve that grievance, that what I am doing is continuing to create a world with those types of energies in it. And so it was in NTI Ephesians when I began to really practice forgiveness. Because that's when I saw that the world is not real and that I was perpetuating the problem by not forgiving. And I didn't want to do that. So until I had a genuine understanding that the world was not real, I was not able to practice forgiveness in the way A Course in Miracles and NTI asked me to. A genuine understanding that the world was not real was a prerequisite to deep, genuine forgiveness, to really letting go, to having no interest in a particular energy because I didn't want to bring that energy into the world. But I also find that accepting that the world is not real is necessary for self-inquiry and awareness, watching awareness meditation. Because there's a lot of stuff to do in this world. You know, there's a lot of things to do, some of which are, you know, responsibilities, some of which are fun, some of which are relaxing, but there's a lot of stuff to do. And if I am going to close my eyes to the degree that Ramana Maharshi asks me to, and practice self-inquiry until I am fully absorbed into the absolute, I have to have an inner, I want to make one word out of two words, so imagine it hyphenated, confidence, determination. Imagine that as one word. I have to have an inner confidence, determination that there is something more real than the world I see in order to close my eyes, ignore the world, ignore thought, and focus on awareness for hours. So again, Ramana Maharshi says, there is no alternative for you but to accept the world as unreal if you are seeking the truth and the truth alone. The truth alone. Did you hear that? The devotee says, why so? And Ramana Maharshi says, for the simple reason that unless you give up the idea that the world is real, your mind will always be after it. If you take the appearance to be real, you will never know the capital R real itself, although it is the real alone that exists. This point is illustrated by the analogy of the snake and the rope. As long as you see the snake, you cannot see the rope as such. The non-existent snake becomes real to you, while the real rope seems wholly non-existent as such. In fact, Ramana Maharshi has said more than once that when you see the world, you do not see the self. And when you see the self, you do not see the world. You know, one of the things that I think we practice when we're not in meditation is we practice, you know, being aware of awareness even while we're in our, you know, doing whatever we do out in our daily world. And I think that's a good practice. But that practice on its own is not strong enough to take you to the absolute. Because in order to go to the absolute, in order to realize the absolute, the world has to disappear. You know, the Hindus have a word for this. They call it samadhi. Only when the world and the self completely disappear, little self, right? Only when the world and the little self completely disappear can we know the capital S self, genuinely, for what it really is, not for what we imagine it to be. And so again, we have to ignore the world entirely. And you can't do that, you know, with your eyes open while you're working. You just can't. So there needs to be that time that we take where we sit down and we close our eyes with that confidence, determination. And we go within. The song is coming into my mind. I want to know you more, right? We go within, always seeking deeper, deeper, further back truth. I want to know you more. And we have to be willing to completely abandon the world. Because again, Ramana Maharshi teaches, and I don't think he's a liar. Ramana Maharshi teaches that when you see the world, you do not know the self. And when you know the self, you do not see the world. I surrender. The devotee says, it is easy to accept tentatively that the world is not ultimately real. And it's kind of funny because what I hear in that is it's kind of like saying, okay, I accept the world's not real, but it is real. You know, that's kind of the way, right? That's kind of the way these words are coming. Like, okay, I accept it, but it is, you know. It is easy to accept tentatively that the world is not ultimately real, but it is hard to have the conviction that it is really unreal. At this retreat that we had this week here in La Vida, the natural meditation retreat, one of the quotes we looked at from Nisargadatta was, I don't remember if it started with meditation. It might have. I don't remember. It might have, or it might have been focusing on the I am presence. I don't really remember. I'll say focusing on the I am presence is as easy as it is difficult. That's what I really remember from the quote, is as easy as it is difficult. And when I contemplated that quote before presenting it to everyone at the retreat, I realized that both easy and difficult are judgments. And that if I say that meditation is easy today, then I'm going to have a day when it's difficult, right? You know, it's like you have to throw away the whole coin, right? You have to throw away the whole easy, difficult coin. And it just is. It just is something that I dedicate myself to, right? Easy or difficult are irrelevant. Well, maybe the same thing is true with this accepting that the world is not real. Because again, listen to what the devotee says. It is easy to accept tentatively that the world is not ultimately real, but it is hard to have the conviction that it is really unreal. So we have the word easy and the word hard, you know, meaning difficult in that sentence. What if we let go of the ideas easy or difficult, and we trust the master, and we just say, okay. You know, one of the things that has just been in my mind, you know, certain lessons show up at certain times, and one of the things that has just been in my mind a lot over the last several weeks is, why not just listen to the master? Eureka, you know. Why not just listen to the master? Why not just have confidence in the master? And in fact, in my Seven Steps journal lately, you know, what I've been writing is you know, this will show up in a few of my entries, is in order to find out that the sages aren't lying, you have to try it yourself, right? You have to listen to them and do as they say without changing it. Oh my God, where have I heard that before? You know, I think that's in the Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, and I've been reading that for years, right? Without changing it, you have to look at what they're saying without changing it, and follow their instructions. And of course, one of the things I'm becoming aware of is that not everyone is capable of doing that. I'm going to use the word yet. And that comes from still having an attachment to me, to what I believe, to what I think, right? If I have an attachment to me, to what I believe, what I think, you know, and I want to keep right on being me, when I look at the master's words, I don't even see them. I know I think I do, but I don't see them. You know, as an example, at the retreat this week, one of the, you know, I sent little groups off with a question and with the master's words, and the master's words answered the question. So it was kind of like I gave you the question and the answer. And like one of the questions was, how do you prepare for meditation, right? And the group came back with all kinds of stuff that had nothing to do with anything in any of the quotes. And in fact, the quotes were clear as day. You don't have to prepare. I mean, it was clear, clear, clear. And yet, you know, three or four people in that group were unable to see it. Yeah, this is important for us. This is important for us. You know, are we blind to the master's words? Or can we look and see exactly what the master is saying and do that? And again, I think part of it is taking out these judgments like easy, difficult, you know? That's just gonna, and in fact, today, I dedicated myself to something that I've never quite been able to do before, because even when I went on retreat before, I had Jamie with me, and Jamie had her needs, right? So I have never been completely alone before on a retreat. This is my first time today. First time. I don't have to think about anybody. Can you imagine that? And although this isn't a lot for some people, for me, this was a lot. I meditated 4 hours today. And one of those times, I think it was the second time I meditated today. There was one of those times, as soon as I got up and started walking to the kitchen, because when I came out of the meditation, it was around 12:30 and I was hungry. I hadn't eaten yet today. When I went to the kitchen, as soon as I arrived at the kitchen sink, I heard clear as day in my mind, that was difficult. And I just said, no, it wasn't, you know? And I'm grateful that we spent time contemplating that quote this week, because imagine if I had believed that was difficult, I would not have gone back for my afternoon meditation. You know, after that, I ate, I think I took a walk, and then I came back and meditated again. I think that's the order I did it in. I would not have gone back. I would have believed the thought it was difficult. And after eating and walking, it's going to be even more difficult, right? And I wouldn't have done it. So these ideas that things are easy or difficult, you know, again, you can't throw out half the coin. You got to throw out the whole coin, right? We just have to let go of those ideas entirely and just do what the master asks us to do if we want to awaken to the degree that the master has, right? Which is awakening to the absolute. Like I said, if you want to find out that Ramana Maharshi isn't a liar, you got to at least try what he's telling you to try. You got to try it yourself, right? How else will you ever know if he's telling the truth or lying? So again, the devotee says, it is easy to accept tentatively that the world is not ultimately real, but it is hard to have the conviction that it is really unreal. And Ramana Maharshi says, even so, is your dream world real while you are dreaming? So long as the dream lasts, everything you see and feel therein is real. Okay, so now here's where I think we start new. That was all kind of a review from last week. So this is the new question. Is then the world nothing better than a dream? And Ramana Maharshi has a fairly long answer, so here we go. What is wrong with the sense of reality you have while you are dreaming? You may be dreaming of something quite impossible, for instance, of having a happy chat can't turn the page to find out what we're chatting with a dead person. I knew it was going to be something fun. I thought, I thought maybe it was going to be with a horse or something like that. I was really excited to see it was on the next page. You may be dreaming of something quite impossible. For instance, of having a happy chat with a dead person. Just for a moment, you may doubt in the dream, saying to yourself, was he not dead? But somehow your mind reconciles itself to the dream vision, and the person is as good as alive for the purpose of the dream. In other words, the dream, as a dream, does not permit you to doubt its reality. Even so, you are unable to doubt the reality of the world of your wakeful experience. How can the mind, which has itself created the world, accept it as unreal? That is the significance of the comparison made between the world of wakeful experience and the dream world. Both are but creations of the mind. And so long as the mind is engrossed in either, it finds itself unable to deny the reality of the dream world while dreaming, and of the waking world while awake. If, on the contrary, you withdraw your mind completely from the world and turn it within and abide thus, that is, if you keep awake always to the true self, which is the substratum of all experience, you will find the world, of which alone you are now aware, just as unreal as the world in which you lived in your dream. So it's a pretty long answer, but what I hear, the short of it is, if you want to find out I'm not a liar, you have to close your eyes and withdraw your attention from the world. You know, we can go back and forth as much as you like about whether this world is real or not, but as long as you're paying attention to it, it is going to appear real. It is going to seem real. In order to see that it's not, you have to close your eyes and withdraw your attention from it. You have to place your attention on the self, right? Again, a very simple instruction. Another thing that's been going on is that we're reading the Seven Steps to Awakening, step one. And, you know, the gist of step one is intellectual knowledge is not knowledge at all. And of course, we're reading these quotes every day, every day, every day. You know, I don't remember what today was, but it's around 20 days that we've been doing this, four quotes a day, and they're all saying the same thing. And a part of what's arising in this awareness that it's not even worth our time to ask spiritual questions like these devotees are, right? It's not even worth our time to ask, you know, is the world a dream or is it real? You know, and how is that so? And but this teacher over here says the opposite. And, you know, it's just not even worth it because we're never going to know that way. We're going to be talking about Joe versus the volcano in a little bit, and I apologize for jumping in a little early. But Joe's life changed when he found out he was supposed to die in 6 months. I don't actually feel old, don't get me wrong. I'm healthy and, you know, a little heavier than usual. You know, I have the middle age gain going on here. But other than that, I feel the same I've always felt. But one of the things that I really contemplate a lot, and pardon the words, I know some people don't like these words, but to heck with you, is that I'm old. And what I mean by that is when I was six and my grandma was 58, which is my age, she was an old woman, right? I'm now that old woman. And the reason I contemplate that is because I have to say I'm on the latter end of the lifespan. What do I want to do with that latter end? If I keep ignoring the fact that I'm on the latter end, I might waste it, just like Joe would have continued to waste his life if he hadn't realized he was on the latter end of his life, or at least hadn't thought that. You know, a lot of people die. Well, a lot of people die even at my age, but when I go to visit my dad, I have the luxury of sitting there at breakfast every morning and listening to him read the obituaries to me. So I know where most people die. And it's between age 75 and 85. You know, some earlier, some later. But if you were going to, you know, do a chart with little dots and find out where the cluster was, that cluster would be between 75 and 85. That's when people die as a generalization, right? Well, I am 58. That means I have, at the lower end of that, less than 20 years. Now, truth is, I might have less. I might have more. But it's helpful to realize, I think, that I'm stepping into the drop-dead zone in less than 20 years. Because that means two things at the same time. One thing that it means is that I don't have a lot of time. And the other thing that it means is that I have plenty of time. Right? It means both at the same time. You know, if I enter the drop dead zone in, 18 years for me? Well, that's not enough time to really waste more time. I mean, you know, I need to make sure I'm living this last 18 years the way I want to. But at the same time, that's still plenty of time to awaken to the absolute. I'm talking about going all the way, by the way, gang, all the way. Ramana Maharshi level enlightenment. There's still plenty of time. But I have to be dedicated to that. Right? I have to be dedicated to that. So, again, what I hear Ramana Maharshi saying, again, using Regina's words, if you want to find out that I'm not lying, then do it. The only way to find out is to find out for yourself. In fact, that was another one of our quotes by Nisargadatta this week, was only that which you find out directly will be of any value to you. That's paraphrased, of course. Only that which you find out directly will be of any value to you. The devotee says, as I said before, again, you hear, I don't even know what the devotee is going to say next, but when you hear, as I said before, what's coming? You know, what's coming is, I believe me more than I believe you. Right? As I said before, we see, feel, and sense the world in so many ways. These sensations are the reactions to the objects seen, felt, etc., and are not mental creations in dreams, which differ not only from person to person, but also with regard to the same person. Is that not enough to prove the objective reality of the world? You know, he might as well just say, you're a liar. And again, I say, what? Why is he there? Why would he travel to Tiruvannamalai, India, from wherever he is from, and go into the meditation hall with Ramana Maharshi, ask a question, and then say, you're wrong? And maybe Ramana Maharshi is a liar. Maybe Nisargadatta Maharaj is a liar. Maybe Michael Langford is a liar. Maybe Peace Pilgrim is a liar. But there's only one way I'm going to find out. The question is, how much do I want to know what's true? That's really the only thing that matters. Am I willing to try what they say? I mean, imagine if you're a kid and you want to learn to play baseball or softball. And you know, or golf, you want to learn to play golf, you know, and you have a coach who's telling you how to grip the bat or how to grip the golf club. You're like, I don't think so. That's not real comfortable. I think I'll do it this way. You know, are you ever going to be good at it? No. So maybe it's the same thing here. Maybe we should see the masters as our coach. And they're coaching us in something we want to learn, like baseball or golf. Right? And so we want to follow their instructions, just like you follow a coach's instruction. So, again, the devotee says, as I said before, because I'm much smarter than you, Ramana Maharshi. As I said before, we see, feel, and sense the world in so many ways. These sensations are the reactions to the objects seen, felt, etc., and are not mental creations as in dreams, which differ not only from person to person, but also with regard to the same person. Is that not enough to prove the objective reality of the world? Ramana Maharshi says, all this talk about inconsistencies and their attribution to the dream world arises only now, when you are awake. While you were dreaming, the dream was a perfectly integrated whole. That is to say, if you felt thirsty in a dream, the illusory drinking of illusory water did quench your illusory thirst. But all this was real and not illusory to you so long as you did not know that the dream itself was illusory. Similarly, with the waking world and the sensations you now have get coordinated to give you the impression that the world is real. If, on the contrary, the world is a self-existent reality, that is what you evidently mean by its objectivity, what prevents the world from revealing itself to you in sleep? You do not say you have not existed in your sleep. And of course, the devotee says, which is what I would have said too in the devotee's position of arguing with the master. This is the same thing I would have said. Neither do I deny the world's existence while I am asleep. It has been existing all the while. If during my sleep I did not see it, others who are not sleeping saw it. You know, that's the exact same argument I would have used. Ramana Maharshi says, to say you existed while asleep, was it necessary to call in the evidence of others so as to prove it to you? Why do you seek their evidence now? Those others can tell you of having seen the world during your sleep only when you yourself are awake. With regard to your own existence, it is different. On waking up, you say you had a sound sleep. So that to that extent, you are aware of yourself in the deepest sleep, whereas you have not the slightest notion of the world's existence then. Even now, while you are awake, is it the world that says, I am real, or is it you? Now, this is a logic that we see both Nisargadatta and Ramana Maharshi using frequently. And I know some people say, I just don't get that logic. And I didn't either when I first started listening to them giving this answer. But I started paying attention. And what I started noticing is when I woke up, when that alarm goes off and I wake up, I do know I've been asleep. Like I really do. There's a knowing there. There's a knowledge there. It's not just because I'm waking up. It's like I'm coming out of something and I'm aware of what I'm coming out of. Even when I had surgery and I came out of whatever it is they give you to knock you out so they can work on you without you crying, screaming and crying. Even when I came out of that, I knew I was coming out of, I actually knew I was coming out of bliss. In fact, although I didn't have a memory of it, there was just this knowledge of it. And in fact, what I told the nurse was, wow, I really like that. What she said to me was, be careful, that's what killed Michael Jackson. But you got to think about that. It did kill Michael Jackson. You know, and you got to think about, wait a minute. Michael Jackson hired a personal doctor to give him this drug so he could sleep that deeply every day because he liked it. How did he know he liked it? Right? How did he know he liked it? Now, you don't have a memory, but you do have knowledge. You know you slept deeply. You know, you even know that you enjoyed it. You know it was deeply restful, right? How do you know that? And this other point that he makes is also a good point where, you know, if someone does tell you, hey, I know that the world was still here while you were asleep because I saw you sleeping on the bed over there. He says, a person can only tell you that when you're awake, which means you're in the dream when they're telling you. So you're taking a dream evidence that's telling you that the dream is real. And again, we can argue with Ramana Maharshi till the cows come home. You know, we can believe him or not believe him. Either way, it's irrelevant. You know, if I believe him, I can go around telling people, oh, he says the world is not real and blah, 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 but I don't know it. And if I don't believe him, have I gained anything? I feel like there were two people that were given to me as gifts. They were given to me because I would trust them completely. And the first was Peace Pilgrim, and the second was Ramana Maharshi. There's too much genuineness in those souls. If I'm not willing to believe and trust those two, there's, you know, then I must not be interested in truth is the only thing I come up with as the end of that sentence. Peace Pilgrim got me started, my trust in her. What if I let Ramana Maharshi finish me off? And of course, the devotee is continuing to argue. Of course I say it, but I say it of the world. Ramana Maharshi says, well, then, that the world which you say is real is really mocking you for seeking to prove its reality, while of your own reality, you are ignorant. You want somehow or other to maintain that the world is real. What is the standard of reality That alone is real, which exists by itself, which reveals itself by itself, and which is eternal and unchanging. Now, I'm really happy that Ramana Maharshi is saying this, but what's most important to me about this is this is in NTI Matthew. I'd never heard of Ramana Maharshi when I was writing NTI Matthew. I learned this from within. You know, within taught me that in order to be real, it has to exist by itself. And then that same withinness, when I got to NTI Ephesians, taught me how the world does not exist on its own power, how it's made by the mind, right? And so I saw that the world does not exist because it's not real. I mean, I saw that. I understood that from within. And it's also withinness that taught me in order to be real, it has to be unchanging. And the world is clearly not unchanging. So if you take those two criteria that I learned from within and that Ramana Maharshi is teaching now, that in order to be real, it has to exist by itself or on its own power, and it has to be unchanging, you might still argue that the world exists on its own power. But unless you are really, you know, an idiot, there's no way you can say the world is unchanging. You can only defend one of those criteria. You can't defend both. Because the world changes all the time. So if that's the definition of real, that it has to be unchanging, well, then the world clearly does not meet that criteria. And you know what else doesn't meet that criteria? The body, the mind, the personality. None of them meet that criteria. So you want somehow or other to maintain that the world is real. What is the standard of reality? That alone is real, which exists by itself, which reveals itself by itself, and which is eternal and unchanging. Does the world exist by itself? Was it ever seen without the aid of the mind? And this is why Ramana Maharshi and Nisargadatta keep going back to, when you were asleep, did you see the world? What they're really saying is that when you're in deep sleep, your mind is not active and you can't see the world because you can only see the world through the mind. But again, that's not an argument that holds a lot of weight with a lot of people, even though they continue to use it. I think there are other arguments that are better, you know, better arguments, but they like that one. They keep using it. So does the world exist by itself? Was it ever seen without the aid of the mind? In sleep, there is neither mind nor world. When awake, there is the mind and there is the world. What does this invariable concomitance, oh my God, what a big word, mean? Okay, let's look up this humongous word. This is even an English word. It's
concomitance. It means occurs together.
Commitant. Well, I can't even say it. Concomitance. Yeah. Existing or occurring together. Exactly. Concomitance. I promise you I'll never use that word again. When awake, there is the mind and there is the world. What does this invariable concomitance mean? You are familiar with the principles of inductive logic, which are considered the very basis of scientific investigation. Why do you not decide this question of the reality of the world in the light of those accepted principles of logic? So again, at least we cannot argue, unless again, we're just crazy. We cannot argue that we ever see the world without the mind also being present. Right? Every single time we see the world, the mind is present. So if that's true, you know, again, that might bring up the curiosity to go into the meditation in the way that Ramana Maharshi and Nisargadatta teach, to turn all of our attention away from the world and place it with the self. Because what they're saying will happen is that the mind will disappear, and so the world will disappear. And again, there's only one way to find out if they're right, and that's to try it. We can definitely agree with them, unless we just want to be argumentative. It's true. Yes, I see a world, but my mind is here. So do I know for a fact that if my mind were gone, if thoughts were gone, that I would see a world? Do I know that for a fact? I don't, do I? Yeah, so it's worth checking into, you know, like he says, be like a scientist, go investigate it, right? Give it a try. Of yourself, you can say, I exist. That is, yours is not mere existence. It is existence of which you are conscious. Really, it is existence identical with consciousness. The devotee says, the world may not be conscious of itself, yet it exists. And Ramana Maharshi says, consciousness is always self-conscious. Now again, I'm fortunate because I know this. Not everybody knows this. I've already had the direct experience. Remember, I had the experience of being the apple. You know, most people don't think that an apple is self-conscious. And it's not self-conscious in the way a person is. You know, like, you know, an apple doesn't think it's fat, or, you know, it's not embarrassed about its blemishes, or, you know, anything like that. You know, can you imagine if an apple hated being round? You know, so in that, it's not self-conscious of an ego self. But when I had the experience of being the apple, what I was aware of, without words, was that I was life awareness, and that everything within me was life awareness, and that everything outside of me was life awareness, right? I had that. That's self-conscious, wouldn't you say? I was self-conscious. So I know that when Ramana Maharshi says that actually the world is self-conscious, you know, he's telling the truth, but this guy doesn't know that. But he's telling the truth. I mean, I don't doubt at all, even though I only experience myself as an apple, I don't doubt that a rock has the same experience, right? The world is itself, it's consciousness and it's self-conscious. So Ramana Maharshi says, consciousness is always self-conscious. If you are conscious of anything, you are essentially conscious of yourself. Unself-conscious existence is a contradiction in terms. It is no existence at all. It is merely attributed existence. Whereas true existence, the Sat in Sat Chidananda, is not an attribute. It is the substance itself. It is the Vastu, and that is a Sanskrit word. So let's see what Vastu is. Substance. Oh, it is the substance. Okay, he just said that. Now he's saying it again in Sanskrit. Reality is therefore known as Sat Chit, being, consciousness, and never merely the one to the exclusion of the other. The world neither exists by itself, nor is it conscious of its existence. And by this, he means the appearance. Like the mountain doesn't think, I am a mountain, right? Consciousness knows itself as consciousness. The world, the mountain, the apple, they do not know themselves as a mountain or an apple, because that's not what they are, right? How can you say that such a world is real? And what is the nature of the world? It is perpetual change, a continuous, interminable flux, a dependent, unself-conscious, ever-changing world. Cannot be real. Well, we'll see. We have 4 minutes left. Maybe if I just read this quickly, we'll finish this chapter. Because I think they're just talking about the same thing over and over. The devotee says, not only does Western empirical science consider the world real, But the Vedas give elaborate cosmological descriptions of the world and its origin. Why should they do so if the world is unreal? Ramana says, the essential purpose of the Vedas is to teach you the nature of the imperishable, Atman, and to declare with authority, thou art that, right? Atman, or the self. The devotee says, I accept. But why should they give cosmological descriptions spun out at great length unless they consider the world real? I think that I accept was a lie. And Ramana Maharshi says, adopt in practice. This is the important part. This is the message, the message, the message. Adopt in practice what you accept in theory and leave the rest. The sastras, let's see what that is. The sastras, the scriptures have to guide every type of seeker after truth, and all are not the same mental makeup. What you cannot accept, treat as Artha Veda or auxiliary argument. And Artha Veda is, sounds like something in Star Trek. Oh, auxiliary argument. So he said it twice again, once in Sanskrit and once in English. Well, you cannot accept, treat as auxiliary argument. We got 2 minutes left. Let's look up auxiliary. Yeah, I knew the military term, engaged in the service of a nation at war. I knew that. But the other definition is providing supplementary or additional help and support. Most of the terms are very military, you know, so it has to be this one. Providing supplementary or additional help and support. So just see everything in the Vedas as being supportive is really what he's saying. It's supporting people in their search for the truth, and it's nothing more than that. But what's most important here is adopt in practice what you accept in theory. That's the most important sentence that we've read today. If you accept that Ramana Maharshi might know something you don't know, then close your eyes and practice self-awareness, self-inquiry. They're the same thing, right? Adopt in practice what you accept in theory, because that's the only way you're going to find out for sure. Thanks. Letting go of the mic.